everybody. It's time for It's All About Food. I am your co-host, Karen Hartglass, here with my partner and co-host, Gary DiMattei.
Hi, Karen. How are you today, Gary?
I'm so good.
Yeah, you look great.
I'm so good. I'm feeling good.
If this thing could be podcast with video, they'd see how great you look.
Oh, thank you, Gary.
You look fabulous.
We're trying to make the most of sheltering in place.
Yes, we're doing it too.
We're doing it. There are some advantages or some things, I think, that we're getting from it.
Well, you're spinning it in a positive way.
Yes.
This morning when we were out on the terrace, you mentioned how quiet it was.
So quiet and so lovely. You know, we live in the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic. That's Queens, New York.
Queens is a borough in New York City,
right?
To remind you all, it is a part of New York City.
People forget that, but we do live in New York City, the place where a lot of essential workers live.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that later.
Yes, we're going to talk about that later.
But we have a terrace, and we've taken advantage of it over the years. We have a little table out there. We like to dine outside in the nice weather, al fresco.
We used to be the only people on our side of the building, at any rate, that used the terrace. Remember?
It was
odd. People would walk by and look at us like, what are those people doing out there actually using their terrace?
But more people are using it, and we've been making an effort now that the sun is kind of coming out to sit in the morning sun tomorrow. And what's very nice is the middle school, the junior high school, whatever you call it, across the street.
Russell Sage Middle School.
Which has a public park and also the school ground park.
Which kind of morphs together.
Exactly. While it's nice that people use these parks, right now no one's using them, and it's very quiet.
Yeah, the park
is fabulously quiet.
I feel bad for the kids and the adults who need to go out and run around and play on the playgrounds, but it's really quiet.
It's really lovely quiet. There's no horn honking. There are no people arguing over a parking spot.
No, it's really... The only noise we hear is the occasional Long Island Railroad passing, which is about 8 blocks away from us.
Yeah, it's a nice sound, though.
Yeah, and I'm happy to hear that the Long Island Railroad is still running. I know that they're closing the subways. You were telling me that.
From 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. to sterilize and also do something with the unfortunate homeless people, clear them away and put them somewhere. I'm not quite sure how that's working out. I understand they're putting some of them in hotels, and that's fine. It's just hard to find staffing for the hotels. And then is there a plan when this is over and the hotels go back to being hotels? I know in other places, some cities I've heard have bought a motel to use, and then they're thinking about reconfiguring it later for affordable housing. What I'm bringing up here is perhaps we will learn from all of this and take some of the good, the peace, the quiet maybe. I know we live in a place where there's tons of people and it's probably very problematic and a lot of mayhem in some small homes filled with children that have a lot of energy and are going crazy. But there is something nice about peace and quiet.
Yes, but also you brought up a good point, and I just want to keep talking about that a little bit. I think it's important. When New York City is shutting down the subways, they're trying to find places for all of the people who live down in the subways.
Yeah.
And eat down in the subways.
Yeah.
You know, basically have nowhere else to go. And so maybe, as you say, some good will come of this. Maybe we'll finally find a solution to housing our less fortunate folks out there that have to live in the subways.
Yeah, well, it's a big problem. And it's, I think, primarily related to capitalism and greed. We have a big gap now, and it's getting bigger between the very, very wealthy and everybody else. Housing is not affordable for most people. And we talk about where we live in Queens, and you like to call it, you like to call Manhattan Disneyland, and
Queens backstage.
Queens is backstage, where all the workers are. And
all the essential workers.
Essential workers, exactly.
Right. And they ride into this Manhattan every day, this Disneyland, this metropolis, and they go to work for all of the big, wealthy, to-do folks that are out there.
For tourists and wealthy folks and...
And then they come home at night, and they're exhausted, and they get ready to do it after taking care of their families and putting dinner on the table. And so dinner on the table is key to this conversation, because we're here to talk about food. We're here to talk about plant-based food. We're here to talk about the importance of plant-based cooking in your own home now, especially because you have really nowhere else to go. We want to give you some tips, and you're giving us some great challenges. So let's start.
We've got the ABCs today.
Yeah, maybe even the Ds and the Es and the Fs.
We'll see how far we get, right?
Yeah. The first thing I want to talk about again is how these online platforms now are really taking over a lot of things. Entertainment. Our business is also the entertainment business, Karen's and mine. And we know a lot of people, as Karen does as well, who are also in the entertainment business, but they also have other jobs. One of them is my friend Scott Canaster, who works for Google. And he just announced that he's proud to be a part of a team that made Google Meet, a pro video conferencing app, which is now free. The world has gone Zoom, but you might want to give this a try. Browser, iOS, and Android flavors. You can start a meeting directly from Google Calendar, or soon you can start a meeting from Gmail. No time limit, 100 people in a meeting, live captions. And you can find out more about that at meet.google.com. Check it out. Way to go, Scott. I'm really proud to know you. So we're going to do our little audio classroom today and start with the ABCs. The A today is
apple cake. Apple cake. We were given the apple cake challenge by listener Donna. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Donna.
And the challenge was basically that she had an old family recipe for apple cake that consisted of a wheat flour, sugar, butter, eggs, you know, the stuff, a little cinnamon. And she wanted a gluten-free version, and she had cassava flour, and she wanted it healthier.
And so, did she also want it plant-based, or was that something?
Yeah, vegan, yeah.
She wanted it vegan, okay.
Sure.
So that's key, because you just mentioned flour, butter, eggs, and sugar.
Right.
And so I wanted to reiterate that she wanted it vegan.
Yes. So the challenge, I think a lot of us know it's pretty easy to make a vegan version of anything today. So you take any kind of baked good. And if you're using a wheat flour, that's fine. There are vegan versions of sugar, evaporated cane juice, and vegan sugars. They're simply not filtered through charred animal bones.
Let's repeat that, Karen, because I don't think a lot of people might know that sugar is filtered through charred animal bones.
Yeah, so filtered through charred animal bones. And they'll say that there's no animal product in the sugar itself, but the fact that that animal product is used directly in making it makes it not really an accepted food for those who are really following a vegan lifestyle. So there are other sugars, evaporated cane juice, sucanat, Florida crystals. A lot of the organic sugars do not filter through animal bones. But I didn't want to use sugar because sugar is not a healthy food.
So the challenge for you was to take it to the next level and not use sugar.
Right. So we've been playing with a variety of versions. First, I started with my new gluten-free flour mix because I didn't have cassava flour. And I've been blending steel-cut oats, millet, and garbanzo bean flour, and doing really well because I wanted to take the starches out of the gluten-free flour mix. And many of the commercial brands of gluten-free flours that you use to, like for a one-to-one replacement for wheat flour, use a starch to kind of lighten it up. And I didn't want the starch because the starch is a more processed food. And I like using the grains whole and then blending them in a Vitamix to make a flour. Okay, some of you might think this is nutty, but that's what
no,
we're
nutty,
doing here.
It's not nutty because you haven't put any nuts in it yet.
Not yet.
But you are going to put some nuts
in it. That's the next
version. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we ordered the organic cassava flour, which came. I'll talk about cassava flour when we get to C. We're in the right. ABCs here. So let's put that aside. But what I used instead of sugar was applesauce.
Applesauce, yeah.
Now, I know that some people sweeten things with apple juice concentrate.
Yes, I used to do that a lot.
Which is fine. But I like using whole foods, folks. Whole foods. So fortunately, our neighbor has a regular delivery slot with Fresh Direct these days, and she's been our supplier of organic Pink Lady apples.
She's been wonderful. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Lori, for that. And so I make applesauce, and applesauce is easy and a wonderful treat to make. The French call it compote, and it's a very nice after-meal dessert.
How civilized. The French call it compote. I mean, it's just lovely, isn't it?
And what I do is I take organic apples. I wash them, of course. I just core them and cut them in chunks. I leave the skins on. When your apples are organic, and they should always be organic, there's wonderful nutrition in the skins. We don't need to peel them when we're making applesauce. And then I cook them in a saucepan. I add about 1/4 cup of water for every 4 apples. Just cook them until they're soft, over low to medium heat, stirring occasionally, keep them covered. They get nice and soft. And then you can let them cool or blend them warm, your choice. Put them in a blender, or if you're fortunate enough to have an immersion blender where you can do it right in the pot, you can blend the apples there and make a nice smooth sauce. You would never know there were skins in there.
Yeah, it's delicious. Absolutely delicious.
Yeah, so that's the applesauce. And I decided to use that
as... And you know, I don't even mind the skins in my applesauce. I really don't.
But you don't even know they're there, Gary.
No, I know. With your immersion blender. But if somebody doesn't have an immersion blender...
Sure, just
and they
like
don't...
a chunky cooked apple delight.
As long as they're organic, right?
Yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah.
You can leave the skins
well,
on.
Well, when I make apple pie, for example...
You leave the skins
on. I leave the skins on and you can see them on the slices.
In French, that's called...
Tarte aux pommes.
Yeah, so... I mean, that's just...
Yeah, but the French peel their apples too. But
well,
Karen
of course.
Doesn't.
But yours is more of a rustic.
It's rustic.
I'm sure out in the country in
Well, what's nice is when you leave the skins on, it gives some dimension and color to the pie. Because I don't put a top crust on
right.
my tarte aux pommes. Jamais!
Jamais.
Jamais. Never. Anyway.
So the applesauce is terrific.
It is
lovely.
Terrific. And it sweetens it, but not too much.
And a lot of people aren't going to dig it because they're going to want it. I mean, a cake, to a lot of folks, it has to be like majorly sweet. So.
Yeah. Now, what I was not sure about when I made this was the recipe's kind of dense. And I was thinking, what can I do to lighten it up? But then I learned from Donna that it's not supposed to be fluffy like a cake. It's more like a cookie or a snickerdoodle, she described. So I think we're good. It's topped with sliced apples and a little sprinkling of cinnamon.
So day one, I was the taste tester.
Yeah.
And it was good.
It was good. It's a great breakfast food.
But as you mentioned, it was dense and the apples didn't stick to the top. So you're thinking about, now you've done day one.
And day two. And day three. And day three had cassava flour.
And day three will reappear on C when we talk about our ABCs.
Yeah, cassava flour. But I have a few more things I want to try this week.
I mentioned maybe putting some chopped nuts in the apple cake to aerate it.
Air it out a little. And there are some apple cakes where they have actual chunks of apples in the dough.
Right. Might want to try some of that. Maybe when we get our raisins from the Wells Fargo wagon. We haven't had raisins in a while. When we get our raisins from the Wells Fargo wagon, we'll put some in the apple cake.
But this is... Oh, I was going to say it's oil-free, so the original recipe has butter, and you could use a vegan butter, but at first I said I'm not going to try butter, but then we tried sesame tahini. And that added a really nice richness.
Was that the day three with the cassava flour?
Yeah.
Okay, back to the apple cake soon in this conversation.
Yeah, so when we're talking about A and we're talking about apples, we like to eat 2 apples a day.
Right.
You know, an apple a day keeps whatever away, but we're getting into a habit of eating 2 apples a day. And they're really good for you. I can't say enough. Now, if you live in a place where apples aren't the thing, that's okay. There are lots of other wonderful fruits out there. But we live in apple country.
But the key is eat some fruit, right?
Eat fruit. Fruit is so good for you.
Yeah. And now we're even...
whole fruit.
Whole fruit. Mm-hmm. Whole fresh fruit.
It's very satisfying.
What is really nice also is that our organic delivery, vegetable delivery service also sells fruit. And so we're getting... As a luxury item.
This is a luxurious item.
One basket of berries.
Yeah.
We had a basket, one little basket of blueberries and one little basket of strawberries. And we treated those like they were gold. Yeah. Remember?
Yes. And those strawberries were some of the best tasting I've ever had. Yeah. I don't know where he got them from, but so good.
Either that or it was because we haven't had them in so long. And we were just... There's a great scene in The Godfather Part 2 where... Robert De Niro's character comes home to his wife in their little apartment on the Lower East Side, and the gift he brings her is a pear. And she treats it like it's this the Holy Grail. I mean, she looks at him with so much love, the actor playing his wife. Aww. And, of course, this is in Italian, right? And she says, Pira, in Italian, and it's just the most wonderful thing. And lately I've been seeing fruit and thinking about that scene because it's such a precious thing to be handling one orange. Right? We order two oranges a week, something that we used to order in the bags or, you know, go to the grocery store and buy this gigantic bag of oranges. Now, you know, we order two oranges a week or one basket of berries a week. And it's like this treasure. It's
Yeah, I'm thinking of Cabaret in the song. A pineapple for me.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine if somebody bought you a pineapple today? It would be amazing. And we aren't overreacting about this. I mean, it's bad out here, folks. There are a lot of people still dying. There's a lot of people getting sick. The city is shut down. I know in other spots, people are lightening up and they're going out and they're, you know, getting haircuts and all of that. But here in New York, we're still... Pretty much obedient.
Yeah. Thank you, New York. There are some who aren't, but for the most part, we're being very good. We're seeing the results.
And we are seeing the results. And they're starting to remove the tents in Central Park and doing some. So anyway, what we're saying is something as precious as a pineapple, you have a new appreciation for the fact that it was flown from somewhere else and gets here to our stores. So another thing we're doing because, and we've always done this here at Responsible Eating and Living, but we're always creating new recipes. We're creating new recipes in the moment. So if we have a little bit of leftover beans and a little bit of leftover rice blend and a little leftover oat flour and a little leftover millet flour and all of our wonderful wide array of dried spices and herbs, if I see that in the refrigerator and it's time to kind of put together a recipe for dinner, I'll get cooking on something and create something. And I made this fabulous bean burger.
Mm-hmm. Very meaty.
Out of all of those things I just mentioned. And I added a little bit of some aquafaba, which we had, which created a nice binder. Some nutritional yeast, which we'll also talk about later. And how it's no longer something just for hippies. Put together this wonderful black bean burger. And let me tell you. It is so easy to make a bean burger. You really only need beans, a little something to bind it together. And as I mentioned, I had like a quarter cup of oat flour and a quarter cup of millet flour. And I made that my breadcrumbs. I know a lot of you have made meatballs and burgers out there before you went plant-based. And I know all of you are going plant-based now. It's wonderful. And then you need a liquid, and that liquid should also be compatible to what you're doing. So the aquafaba, which is the water from the can of beans, which I saved, went in there and was my liquid and the herbs and spices. And I just kept kneading it with a spoon until it looked like I could put it together as in a patty and herbs and spices baked it in the oven. You kind of have to eyeball it. I'll put the recipe up at Responsible Eating and Living. I think we already have a lentil burger recipe up there, and I will look for that and put it up with today's link to the show. So,
but it wasn't lentil. It was a different bean.
It was
right?
a bean. It was a different bean. But any bean will do.
Any bean will do.
Yeah, Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Any bean will do. I'm sorry, I butchered that. But anyway, any bean will do. To the theme of any dream will do.
And you know, the secret about burgers, and we've said this before, is the fixings.
Yeah.
So sautéed onions, sautéed mushrooms, a nice mayonnaise-y kind of sauce, which right. can be blended cashews or a blended nut with some chipotle seasoning.
Yeah, and if you want it to taste greasy, here's what I do. I put a little oil on my hands when I make the patty, and that's all you need. And wow. then I lay it on a cookie sheet that's lined with parchment paper, and I bake it in a really hot oven, just like you do a cookie. You bake your bean burger like a cookie because it's a bean cookie. And
bean cookies. There you go,
And then
go,
I brushed
Gary.
It with barbecue sauce. And again, Karen was talking about apple juice from concentrate, but you can sweeten barbecue sauce with apple juice if you want something sweet. It's
or one of our fruit butters. Like we make prune butter from dried prunes and water. We make apricot butter from dried apricot and water. And
dates. You can blend up some dates with some water and make a date paste.
So this is a great way to sweeten things that need just a little sweetness.
Right. This is if you're wanting to go healthy with this stuff and also have it be decadent, because it does taste decadent. When you put all the fixings on your burger, just like Karen said, slap it between a couple of lettuce leaves if you're not into bread, or a gluten-free bun, or a couple of tortillas, which we're also going to talk about.
Oh.
Later when we talk about C for cassava and corn.
Corn, that's right. And let's get to C, Gary.
Yeah. So anyway, the bean burgers are a great idea, and you can make them from leftovers. And the rice mix that we have at the Responsible Eating and Living website is a wonderful rice mix that we always keep on hand. Anyway, so let's go to C.
Let's go to C. Okay, cassava flour. Now, the first thing is I need to spell cassava. C. A-S-S-A-V like Victor A, cassava. Now, if you have a Spanish interpretation, you might say cassava, but it's not to be confused with cassava melon, which is C-A-S-A-B-A, the honeydew melon, cassava melon. Cassava flour is from the starchy tuberous root from a tropical tree, and it's used as a food in tropical countries. There's one little caveat that it requires a little careful preparation to remove traces of cyanide, okay? But people who make cassava flour know how to do that, and it's a major source of carbohydrate. It's the third largest source of food carbohydrates in the tropics after rice and maize, which is corn, and it's a fascinating food. Now, the thing is, because it comes from the tropics, it needs to get here. And there may be some people that are growing cassava, which is also called yucca, which is Y-U-C-A, not to be confused with the New Zealand plant yucca, Y-U-C-C-A. But we're talking about the tuber, the root, and it makes a great flour. Now, I got it organic from Vitacost, and it's $5.50 a pound for organic, so it's not the most cost-effective. But again, we like to buy foods that are organic and whole or primarily minimally processed, good for you. And we were curious. So we tried the cassava flour, and I'm going to get it again because it works really nicely. Now, it's supposed to work one-to-one in substituting for a wheat flour. You can use cassava flour. It's kind of fine, the version
powdery,
that we
right?
got very powdery. So when we were pouring it into the bowl and into the jar to store it, it got kind of dusty. So you want to be careful about that.
But we had $5.50 a pound. You don't want
you
to
don't,
let it,
you don't want to waste any of it.
You don't want to let it's kind of like your drug cartel flour.
Maybe snort some of it while it's in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. Anyway, so Donna, who wanted us to make the apple cake, sent a recipe. When she heard we were making corn tortillas from Masa Harina, she sent a recipe using sweet potatoes and cassava flour. So we got the Masa Harina, the organic Masa Harina. Also got it at Vitacost.com.
This was the big event of the week, folks.
Okay, we don't get any affiliate commission from plugging Vitacost, but we find them to be a very nice source for right. some of our dried goods. So we got the masa harina and the cassava flour, and I went nuts and made tortillas.
This was the big event. The tortilla making was the big event.
Absolutely. And we didn't have a tortilla press, although we might
because
think about getting one.
It's so difficult to find organic corn tortillas out there. So we found the masa harina organic, and so we
bought
some.
And sometimes when we buy them, they have a little mold in them.
Already made, you mean?
Already made,
yeah. You got to be careful. In that plastic bag package, there's a lot of mold.
So the masa harina version of tortillas, so easy to make. You get the masa harina, you mix it with a little warm water, you let it set for an hour or so, and then you can take little chunks, roll them in balls, and put them in between parchment paper or wax paper and roll them out into little circles. Then you can put them on a cast iron pan and just warm them up on either side. Right. Fabulous. And then the cassava flour sweet potato tortilla is basically the same thing. The sweet potato, it moistens the flour. And that's all that's in it. There's no extra liquid. The recipe I used recommended pretty much a 1-to-1 ratio, but I would caution and say add the flour to the sweet potato until you have a moist dough. I found that I needed less flour than the recipe recommended, so if I had dumped equal amounts right away, I would have needed to add more moisture, and we were out of sweet potato puree. So that's all I would suggest. Just take cooked sweet potato, about a cup and a half. Slowly add the cassava flour in up to a cup and a half or so until you have this moist dough. And you could add like a half a teaspoon of baking soda, I think it was. I forget now. But the recipe's from Remy Park's blog, VeggieKinsBlog.com. I'll link it in today's broadcast. Anyway, the tortillas were...
fantastic.
Fantastic.
They were lovely. And again... they made about, oh, I'd say they made about, what, 8 of the cassava sweet potato?
Yeah,
and
about 10 or
10
12
or 11 of
yeah.
the...
Anyway, it was great.
And you were really working your arms with that rolling pin.
Yeah, and I know a tortilla press is easier because I used to have one long ago.
And you also, you rolled it out, and then you had a bowl that you used as a cutter.
Yeah, you don't have to, but...
but it made them nice and uniform.
I like to make them uniform, yeah. So we took a large bowl that we had, and I just put it, cut it like a cutter, yeah.
They were about a 6 to 7 inch, maybe even longer.
Yeah,
anyway,
maybe.
Well, there's pictures at the Responsible Eating and Living website and on the Facebook page, on Instagram. If you're following us on Instagram, check them out, and then Karen will post a recipe, correct?
There you go. So that's C for cassava and corn, both gluten-free grains that you can make flour with, and organic is best.
Yes, because we don't want any glyphosates.
Oh, the bad, evil glyphosate.
Yeah, in our food.
Okay, let's go to D.
Let's
A,
go
B,
to...
A, B, C, D.
A, B, C, D.
D, 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 vitamin D, folks.
Vitamin D. Let's say that again. Vitamin D. It's really important to have your vitamin D. Why is that important, Karen?
Vitamin D is linked to so many ailments today, the lack of vitamin D deficiency. They're finding like every chronic disease could be more manageable if we had the right levels of vitamin D. Of course, it would be best to get vitamin D naturally. It's a hormone that we produce when our skin is exposed to the sun. There's that caveat. I love the word caveat. There's that caveat of getting too much sun or a concern about skin cancer.
Right.
But we need sun.
We need sun. We need at least about 10 minutes of sun a day,
That's
right?
That's what's recommended.
Right.
So we've been fortunate because we have an east exposure terrace.
Right.
And the sun's been coming out, and we've been sitting in the morning on our very quiet terrace.
Right. See how this all works together, folks? We have one segue right into the other. And vitamin D, we've been getting a lot of vitamin D lately.
Our freckles are coming out.
Yeah, we're getting a nice glow to our skin. And of course, we don't overdo it. We just, you know, we can't because the sun doesn't stay out that long.
Yeah, but, so getting vitamin D through sun exposure is ideal. Now, if you can't, of course, the recommendation is to supplement.
Right.
And there's a question about how much to supplement, and the range is somewhere between 1,000 IUs to maybe 5,000 IUs, and more doctors now are recommending with the coronavirus to take up to 5,000 units, and that's really your decision.
And if you're going dairy-free and you want to do vitamin D, because a lot of you are probably concerned about dairy-free, going dairy-free and vitamin D because some milks
is supplemented with vitamin D. It doesn't come with vitamin D naturally.
No, they put it in there, folks. It's not something that is automatic.
And okay? and I'm glad you brought that up, Gary, because personally, it's a choice. I don't want to consume foods that are supplemented with synthetic vitamins. Why? Because if I feel I have a need to supplement with a synthetic vitamin, I want to know exactly how much I'm getting.
Right.
And if you're depending on a vitamin D supplementation program by consuming dairy, you don't know how much you're getting. The same is true with plant milks that are supplemented with vitamins. And when we buy a plant milk, it's just soybeans and water. Or we'll make our own cashew and water, or almond and water, or hemp seed and water. We don't supplement with vitamins because we take vitamins separately, knowing how much we're getting.
Exactly. And that's really the important part of this topic, is you want to know what you're putting in your body.
Yep.
You don't want somebody doing it for you.
Right.
So that's why we are blabbing today about making our own things and eating them, because that's very important.
And if we get to the letter F today, we're going to touch on this subject again.
Absolutely.
But so, that's to come.
Right. And you know, when you go dairy-free, you're doing a lot more. And again, this is all about food, so you're connecting the dots when you listen to this program. But you're doing a lot more than just kicking the dairy. You're saving lives. You're saving not only the life of the cow, but you're saving the life of the cow's calf. And you're saving the life of the person working with the cows.
That kind of moves into E.
E. E. E for easy.
E for eating.
E for essential.
Essential. Yes. That reminds me of a poem that I learned a long time ago on Sesame Street.
Ooh, Sesame Street.
Can I recite it?
I'm sure they're in coronavirus lockdown too.
Yeah.
There's probably not too many people wandering around Sesame Street these days.
No, nobody even knows what Sesame Street is anymore.
Or of maybe course they do.
Of course they do.
It's still on the air.
Well, I learned this poem a long time ago.
Okay.
E, see me eating a peach, sitting on my eagle, chasing a beagle, to the queen on her knees, under a tree by the sea. She was looking for her Easter egg, having a dream about eating ice cream in the land of steam. When a baby seal tickled her heel, she let out a squeal and woke from her dream in time to see the eagle and me flying away with the Easter egg over the evening sea. Hee-hee-hee. E.
That's very nice. Of course, you're talking about a chocolate Easter egg.
Chocolate Easter egg, vegan ice cream. Sure. And a peach. A nice, warm, ripe peach.
Of course. That keeps with our theme about fresh fruit.
And eating. Okay. Essential workers. This is a hot topic today. We go out at 7 p.m. every evening and we applaud with our neighbors in gratitude for essential workers. And I wanted to bring up an article, an opinion article that came out yesterday in the Washington Post by Jonathan Safran Foer. Meat is not essential. Why are we killing it? And you may remember Jonathan Safran Foer, the best-selling author of Everything is Illuminated and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, both wonderful fiction books that they made wonderful movies out of.
Yeah, they were terrific movies.
And then he came out with a nonfiction work called Eating Animals, and more recently, the book We Are the Weather, Saving the Planet Begins at Breakfast. I had the opportunity to speak with Jonathan Safran Foer when this book came out, and we'll link that interview to today's post. But his opinion article is very timely, and he brings out some very important points about essential workers. And we're feeling a lot of gratitude for those essential workers.
Yes, we are.
But there's more to it. And it's the fact that some of these essential workers are working because they have to. They right. won't eat unless they work. And many of us have the privilege of staying at home, following the shelter-in-place order, but we can. We can. It's difficult financially, but we're still eating.
Right.
And he writes the following. In the past months, we have relied upon the bravery of essential workers. Most of us, including myself, have also bent language to our preferences. It is not brave for a delivery person to continue to work when he has no way to feed his family otherwise. Calling it brave is both condescending and a method of masking our own guilt about people forced into those situations.
Wow. So powerful.
Read the entire article. It is a very important one. But yes. we're talking about these slaughterhouses and meat industry shops
right.
that are being closed because so many of the workers are getting the virus. And now the president has used the Defense Production Act to order slaughterhouses and meatpacking plants to stay open. And what is that about? It's about those who have that want to continue having what they're used to at any expense.
Yes.
And a lot of us vegans or people who understand the cruelty that goes into slaughtering animals for food don't want the animals to suffer. But it's bigger than that. It's people, human and non-human animals, are suffering in this industry. And it's becoming more apparent than ever.
Yes. Very good article. A must read. And obviously brings out the activist in Karen Harkless.
I get excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because it's needed right now in a calm, cool way. We need to get angry about this, if I can just be paradoxically confusing. In a calm way, we need to be angry about how we are being exploited. Not only as workers, but as human beings who are suffering right now. Yeah, it's great to have the cheer at 7 o'clock. I go out there and bang a pot every night and blast New York, New York, because I really believe that these folks need to be cheered, but they need so much more from us right now.
Exactly.
And we can help them by going plant-based.
So at the very minimum, stop eating animals. Stop supporting these industries that are not only cruel to animals, but are cruel to humans as well.
Right. That's not to say that there's a lot of cruelty going on with these farmers that are in the fields day and night, making sure that we get our vegetables and our fruits, all of the things that we're talking about, these luxuries that get shipped to us. All workers straight across the board need to be the system needs to be retooled.
Yes, they need to be paid a livable wage. They need to be able to send their children to school. This is not only in the United States, but also in all countries. They need to have the appropriate protective equipment in order to grow food and process food.
Yes.
We need to be insisting on organic food and growing food without toxic chemicals. And for the people that have to use certain chemicals to grow food, that they have the protective equipment necessary to do so they're not exposed. And when they leave the fields, to not bring residues of these toxic chemicals into their homes.
Yes, if the virus has taught us anything, it has taught us that these things stay with you and you bring them home.
Personal protective equipment is right. necessary, not just in hospitals, but also in many industries.
In grocery stores, clerks handling food should have protective equipment. I mean, let's do this, folks. Yeah. We can do this.
A lot of this can be brought into the next phase, whatever that's going to be.
Right. If the virus has taught us anything, it has taught us that we are not alone and everything we do affects the other person around us.
Gosh, I hope we've learned that. I know. Well, I've learned it. I'm washing my hands a lot more. I'm probably still touching my face a lot.
No, actually, you've cut way back.
Thanks, Gary.
I know I haven't. I'm still putting my hands through my hair and still doing all these things, and I catch myself. But I mean, listen, you're probably experiencing the same thing out there. Going out to the garbage can is a major event here in an apartment building. You have to get your mask on, you have to put your gloves on, and you risk bumping into somebody taking out their garbage. I mean, as we've mentioned on the show before, we don't do our laundry in the laundry room anymore. Some folks down there just refuse to stay away from...
They're not following the recommendations that we have for this building for using laundry rooms during coronavirus pandemic.
Right. I don't use the elevator. I mean, when I go down and pick up a package... I muscle it up the stairs because I know that the elevator is a small box. Anyway, E is very powerful, Karen.
It's a powerful letter.
And we did make it to F.
We did. So let's get to flavor.
Flavor, food, fun.
Flavor, food, fun.
What kind of fun are you having, Karen?
I'm doing my best. You know, I'm jumping rope inside now.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on mentioning that, but you said fun. And we're exercising and we're doing our stretching and our yoga and lifting light weights and whatever we can. But for aerobics, I've started to jump rope, and I've wanted to jump rope inside or outside or wherever for a long time. I got the jump rope, and then I never really used it. And then I cut it down so that it was the right length, because you have to have a rope that's the right length for you if you're going to jump rope properly.
Right, you're really going for it too.
And now I'm actually doing it. I've learned that 10 minutes of jump roping is equivalent to 30 minutes of running.
Wow.
And I really can only do a minute at a time, and then I take a break, but I'm working up to it.
Yeah.
I mean, just last week, I couldn't jump 10 jumps in a row.
And again, our neighbor downstairs.
Our poor neighbor.
Yeah, bless her heart. Bless her ears.
Yeah. Sometime I'll go outside and jump rope, but why was it so easy as a kid, and it's not that easy as an adult?
Well, I think the next thing we need to do is get some boxing gloves in here. And the headgear and the mouthpieces. And we need to start sparring. Of course, okay. I won't spar, but you can shadow box.
I can spar, sure. All right, let's get back to flavor. And I wanted to talk about nutritional yeast. Nutritional yeast, which got a big plug in the New York Times.
Yay, nutritional yeast. I don't know where I'd be without my noosh.
And the title of the article, which came out a few days ago, May 8th, nutritional yeast is for hippies, noosh is for everyone. Noosh, spelled N-O-O-C-H, is the groovy term for nutritional yeast. And apparently nutritional yeast has gone mainstream. Congratulations, nutritional yeast.
Now, you and I used to use a nutritional yeast that had something in it, and then we switched.
That's correct.
What shall we alert our listeners to regarding that thing that was in our yeast?
Well, we always bought Red Star nutritional yeast. It's very popular. You can find it in grocery stores in these small containers and shake it in a shaker, and you can shake it on your food. And since we use so much of it, I went to bulkfoods.com, and I used to get it in bulk. We would buy 5 pounds of nutritional yeast, and it was a good price. But then I learned that Red Star and other brands fortify their nutritional yeast with synthetic vitamins. These are not vitamins that are grown naturally on the yeast. And I didn't know that. And originally, we loved nutritional yeast because it was a source of B12. And we thought, oh, I'm getting all this wonderful B12 from my nutritional yeast, and that's a good thing.
It was a natural source of B12.
No, it was synthetically added.
Oh, see how wonderful this show is?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Because we learn in the moment, too.
And it's not an ideal source of B12 because you don't know how much you're getting.
Again, this is all segueing together, folks. We don't make this stuff up. It just happens.
Which is why we know what vitamins we need to supplement, and we get them in a pill form from brands we trust, and we get a known amount that we want to consume, a safe amount, but a known amount, so we're not missing the minimum and we're not getting too much if there is a maximum. And in nutritional yeast, we use it as a flavor. We use it as a umami. We use it for something enjoyable that adds to food.
Umami?
umami is that groovy word that people talk about, and that it's this mushroomy, meaty, cheesy kind of flavor.
Oh, yeah. Umami.
Umami.
I like that. I'm going to start using that. Umami.
Umami. Well, there's salty and sour and sweet.
And umami.
And umami.
Okay. That's going into my lexicon.
We don't want to use nutritional yeast as a source for supplemental synthetic vitamins, including folic acid, which is the one I'm more concerned about than B12. I'm not that concerned about getting too much B12 because I don't know that there is a known maximum amount that we can consume. Mm-hmm. But folic acid, Dr. Furman has pointed out, he's leaving it out of his multivitamins because folic acid, which is the synthetic version of folate, which we get from vegetables like dark leafy greens and is very necessary, folic acid can be problematic. So he leaves it out of his vitamin. We recommend that you don't get vitamins with folic acid, and you don't need folic acid in your noosh.
Right.
So we buy an unfortified brand. We use the Cal unfortified brand. Dr. Furman has his own nutritional yeast that is not fortified. We also don't want our nutritional yeast to be fed on genetically modified foods or to grow it.
Right.
So there's something.
It's an interesting process to make nutritional yeast, and it's not the yeast that you use to rise your bread.
Right. It's not that kind of yeast, nor is it the stinky brewer's yeast that's out there. Nutritional yeast is different.
So fun. That's fun to talk about nutritional yeast, and you can make a lot of cheesy things in addition to umami things. You can make things taste cheesy with nutritional yeast. I've had fun this week making, I've had fun for the last 12 years with you, Karen, but this week.
13,
right. I remember it well. It was the first time I tried nutritional yeast as well as tahini and so many other things. You've opened up my world of food. But one of the things I've make is my own, I used to call it grating cheese. Some people call it vegan Parmesan. But I grind up a little different nuts. I've been using cashews, and now I'm using walnuts. I'm mixing it with some nutritional yeast and some spices and some herbs, and I make my own vegan Parmesan, and it's fun to put on.
It's fun.
Everything.
Everything. Soup.
Pasta, veggies, everything. It's just fabulous. So you could have a lot of fun with nutritional yeast. And the other thing I'm having fun with, or seeing that people are having fun with, is sourdough bread. Everybody's baking their own bread, and they say they're having fun, and they're making sourdough starters. While we're on the theme of yeast, the wrong kind of yeast than what we were talking about, but yeast nonetheless, those of you out there that are making your own sourdough starters.
I want to know about gluten-free sourdough starters. So once upon a time, I used to have my own sourdough starter, and it was wheat-based. And it was wonderful. The challenge with starters is that they need to be fed regularly. So if you're traveling a lot, like we were doing for quite some time, for months, it's kind of hard to feed your starter. So I stopped with the starter a long time ago. And now I'm curious to make a gluten-free starter. I've read about some of them online, but here's where I'm going out to you folks. Does anyone make a gluten-free sourdough starter? Let us know.
Yeah, we want to know if you make a gluten-free. I'm working on a gluten-free cheese souffle, a vegan cheese souffle. I'm a classically trained chef. Not that I'm any good.
You're wonderful, Gary. Don't do that.
Well, I mean, there are chefs out there, and then there are.
Yeah, but they don't eat here, and I know the food is good.
There are chefs out there, and there are cooks. I would call myself a cook.
Okay.
But I have a lot of cookbooks, and I have a lot of classic cookbooks. I've gone through a bunch of them and am trying to veganize a lot of my favorite classic recipes. You may know this by following Responsible Eating and Living for however many years you have. But I'm working on a cheese souffle, and that's obviously with vegan cheese and film at 11, as they say. I will keep you posted, and Karen will keep you posted on the apple cake challenge.
Yes. Well, when it's finished, it'll be posted as a recipe.
Yeah.
And I think it'll have variations because we've been making variations. And they're all good.
And another fun topic, and I don't know if we have enough time, but I'll just give it a quick go. There's a lot of places now going back to drive-through restaurants, if you can believe it. Kind of tough here in New York, but I'm sure that in other areas of the country, and if not the world, you might be seeing more drive-through options. And so there's been several of the veggie sites that have been reporting a lot of these restaurants that have drive-through options are now also upping their vegan options. I'll just give you a few on a list here. There's a place called Plant Power Fast Food. I don't know where that is. Maybe there's one in your neck of the woods. They're doing a lot of plant-powered fast food, and they have drive-through options. Richardo's, the Total Vegetarian, formerly known as Orin's, the Health Express, and that's in Pasadena. They're doing some. Amy's Drive-Thru.
We need to go there.
Has two locations, one in Rohnert Park, Sonoma County, California, and San Francisco Airport. The completely vegetarian menu has several vegan options, including chili cheese fries, blah, blah, blah. They're doing drive-thru. Life, the vegan drive-thru. The first vegan drive-thru in Florida. Life.
Where is that, Gary?
Check it out. It is in Florida at Cape Coral. At the end of last year, choose from a variety of vegan takes on fast food, like coconut bacon cheeseburgers and fish-free tuna melts.
Oh.
I make a great fish-free tuna salad with okara.
Okara. We can't wait for our beans to arrive on the Wells Fargo wagon.
And the famous Chipotle. Some of them have now offered drive-through, and they've got a lot more vegan options. Chipotle for your fast food fun fix under the letter F.
Fast food fun fix.
And Carl's Jr. now has gone beyond burger, beyond sausage burrito, beyond meat for breakfast, beyond barbecue cheeseburger, all that. Hardee's, H-A-R-D-E-E-S. I don't know where that is, but you may have a Hardee's. They're now going beyond beef and drive-through. Burger King, Taco Bell, McDonald's, vegan menu at McDonald's? What? Is this right? That's kind of tough for me to figure out. Poncho's, vegan tacos, wherever they may be, are doing drive-thru. White Castle. We all know where White Castle is.
We have one right in our hood.
Apparently they're doing vegan now. They have some vegan options, and they're doing drive-thru. Dairy Queen, Del Taco, Dunkin' Donuts, Tim Hortons, Wendy's, Starbucks.
Capitalism and creativity go hand in hand.
I'm not condoning any of this consumption.
Oh, there we go. Capitalism, consumption, and creativity.
Wow, that was a great alliteration, Karen. Capitalism, consumption, creativity, coercion.
And coronavirus.
And coronavirus.
Which may actually be a good thing, or there may be some good things that come from it. There are certainly some bad things that have come out of it, but
yes.
I'm hoping that some good things come
from it. So much heartbreak. So much heartbreak. There has to be some.
There has to be some silver lining.
Artists will spin this beautifully, even though it's tragic. So thank you to the artists out there.
Well, I think we've talked about this many times ourselves, and maybe on this program, how we've needed to have a serious crisis in order to make needed change.
Yes. And another fun thing, Paris, speaking of
dealing
with the crisis, is supposedly now they are easing on their restaurants. The plan for the restaurants is to take over the parking spaces in front until September, their outdoor restaurants on the
Champs-Élysées?
No, the streets with the numbers and then the arrondissements.
Oh, the arrondissement?
Yeah. They're taking over the parking places, putting tables out there, keeping them separate.
That's beautiful.
And
they've always been really good at eating outdoors.
And there's going to be a big subsidies for bikes and e-bikes and closing streets to traffic permanently, like the Rue de Rivoli or Rivoli.
Yeah. Rue de Rivoli.
Yeah. Will help improve the city getting back on its feet. And I think that's a great idea.
That's a great thing.
Closing some streets to traffic, putting tables out on the streets, getting these restaurants to start reopening again. That can't be a bad thing.
No, that's a good thing.
As long as they protect their essential workers, their food servers, get them some PPEs to wear when they go to tables.
Okay, so there's some hope on the horizon.
Well, in Paris, it sounds like they're starting to make some pretty good strides to get some places open. So a little creativity, a little engineering. There's a great piece in the New Yorker about how engineers are working on these ventilators that are fast to make. They're inexpensive.
Yes, well, if we had some good leadership, we would be able to do a lot of these things very quickly.
Right.
But we don't.
Well, chaos. But they're creating chaos so they can rule us. And it's up to us to unite. And if we can unite, we'll get through this. If we can't unite, then we won't. But I think we can.
I think we can. We're in this together. Let's unite, everybody.
Yeah, let's unite.
Okay, that was the ABCDEFs of food today on It's All About Food.
And we ended with you. Unite!
Okay.
ABCDEFU. Wait, no, I can't say FU.
No.
No, I can't.
Okay.
You know, they were all thinking about it out there, so I had to bring it up.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass.
And I'm Gary DiMattei. Have a delicious week, month, year.
Bye-bye. Thank you.